Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard, and the Inside Analog Photography radio program is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. Great black and white, chrome, negative, instant pack film, you name it, and Instax now in the country. Check them out, www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends over at, of course, Richard Photo Lab, a great place to send all of your chrome, your color neg, everything. These guys do beautiful work. Check them out, richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5, so you can turn your black and white negative film into chrome. That's it. Black and white chrome, incredible stuff. Check them out, www.dr5.com. Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com, the place to get a camera strap that will not let the camera slide off your shoulder. A necessity in photography, make sure you check them out. And of course, our media partners are the Analog Photography User Group, APUG.org, the place on the net to find out everything about the traditional photographic process. You name it, it's going on over there. Emulsion making, development, black and white, color, you name it, everything going on, wet plate, dry plate, alternate printing process, you name it, it's all happening, APUG.org. We've got a great show lined up for everybody today. We're going to have with us Ian Spanier. Ian is a professional photographer. He shoots a lot of portrait work. He does a lot of editorial portraiture, a lot of great stuff. He has some beautiful travel photography. And guess what? He shoots film. Great stuff going on with Ian. You can check his website over at www.ianspanier. That's IanSpanier.com. IanSpanier.com. Ian, how you doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. You have some beautiful photography, and we wanted to talk to you today, Ian, about your portraiture, your editorial work, your travel photography, and how you're shooting film and how you're dealing with customers in regards to the issue of analog capture and just a lot of great stuff. You have some beautiful photography. So tell us to start off with here, Ian. How'd you get involved in photography? Did you start doing this as a kid? What got the bug going for Ian?
Well, it definitely was when I was a kid. When I was six, my parents actually gave me a point-and-shoot camera. I kind of credit them for getting things started. And oddly enough, every time I tried to get away from photography, it ended up finding its way back to me. I actually went to college originally, one, to play soccer, and two, to study sports medicine because I thought that's what I wanted to do. As classes were getting harder and my schedule was tight because of soccer, I started taking the art classes to keep my grades up, and photography came around again, and all of a sudden I started spending all my time in the darkroom instead of the training room, and it's kind of where the main switch happened. That just kind of led to pretty much going from that point on full force into photography, some stints in editing and all that, but it was always there. It was always a part of my life.
So did you start off with doing portraits? How did you actually get into being a full-time professional commercial photographer? Your website's got some beautiful portraits on there. You've got some really cool travel photography. You've been publishing, I don't know how many magazines, but there's a lot on your website, some great stuff. How did you actually get into where you were taking more art classes in school and actually getting into doing this as a profession, and how'd you get started with that?
Sure. Well, I think like a lot of people in college, you kind of think of yourself as an art photographer, and I put quotes on that. And I kind of felt that way about it in school, and I was always working on projects and not really working on what I thought would turn into a commercial career necessarily. When I was doing an internship over the summer, one summer at GQ magazine, I really kind of saw that there's a value to the commercial work and could make some money and do some pretty cool stuff. And of course, the stories back then were not just about a celebrity. There was a lot more kind of crime and fantasy and all this other stuff that was going on there. So got exposed to some really nice and interesting stuff. When I saw that and then went back to college, I kind of got in a little bit of a tiff with my professor at the time because he was an art photographer and he really wasn't keen on the commercial world. So we respectfully argued about it quite a bit, but I still had quite a bit of respect for the art world, but I just knew that it wasn't something I wanted to do after college. So I went into magazines as an editor right out of college, but I was always shooting on the side. And the funny story about it is actually that I told myself, like I was kind of mentioning to earlier, I told myself I was not going to shoot after college and I was just going to have it as a hobby. Like literally the first couple weeks I was back at GQ with a full-time job, it was like deadline and they decided to switch the book review for the issue at the last minute and they needed the book photographed. There was no time to actually hire a photographer and send it out and all that stuff. Told my boss, well, I have a flash at home. I can go buy a piece of white paper and set up a still life if you want. And so she said, go for it. And I did that. And that stuck to 6.5 years of being a still life photographer at that point. I obviously eventually started making the studio equipment work more than just a handheld flash. blinking in the dark to see what the shadow would look like and all that, but it was what got me started. And I think all along, really to go back to your question, is I just didn't really want to be a still life photographer. I liked shooting it, but I was more interested in people. And that kind of went back to what I was doing in college, which was photographing mostly people and studying people. And so that's kind of where things moved on to doing portraits. And then travel, which of course encompasses still life and everything. So I liked doing kind of a bit of everything.
Do you find now that people hunt you out because of previous work you've done through maybe some connections you have through your editorial? Or is it because of a certain look? How are people finding Ian and what you're doing photography-wise?
I'd say a good portion of the assignments that I get are repeat clients, which is what everybody wants. Been fortunate enough to have a good relationship with a few magazines that just repeatedly come back to me and I shoot on a regular basis for them. The new ones are really, I guess, coming out of a combination of me going after them and showing interest in shooting for them and showing my work to them. Then the occasional, which is always great, somebody seeing your work somewhere and saying, I saw this, I really liked it, and I want you to do this for me. And that's, I think, a bit more difficult, but when it happens, it's great. Because you've already kind of got the job, in a sense, when they call you at that point. And then it's just a matter of working out the budgets with them.
You have some just beautiful travel photography on your website. Tell me about this trip to Havana. Must have been a trip.
Yeah, it was great. I've actually been shooting on a contract for a company called Double Down Media, which publishes five different magazines. And one of the magazines, their newest one, which is a cigar magazine, it's taken me to shoot cigar industry leaders, workers, factories in six different countries. So it's been really amazing. I'm actually literally working right now on retouching the culmination of a big part of the experience with them, where I did portraits of basically the legends of the cigar industry, doing a 32-page portfolio in the spring issue. So I'm working on retouching those right now. Havana in itself was really cool. We had to get in under the wire and all that stuff. I'm an American citizen, and it's really hard to go there with equipment. They didn't like it. They grabbed my passport for about 2 or 3 days down there. I managed to kind of under the table talk them into a press pass that kind of led to me finally getting my passport back. But it was an interesting experience. I mean, it's the kind of place where I think everyone who's seen that I've gone there has always asked me, because it's just one of those places where everybody wants to go and experience.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's some great stuff. And when people go to your site and look at the actual travel photography about the stuff you shot in Havana, this was all shot available light. Did you use any flash? Tell us about some of this portrait stuff, because you have some really great editorial, like we said, travel thing, but there's some great portraiture in here. It looks like it was all natural light.
Yes. The thing that I've tried to do is really kind of goes off my whole mentality about photography in general, which is all lighting is, in most cases, is just mimicking what nature does. Even when it comes to like high key lighting, where you've got multiple sources, each of those sources is really imitating something that happens naturally. Or in some cases, unnaturally, be it a reflection off a mirror or a reflection off a piece of glass and stuff like that. Because I kind of always saw the world that way, you learn to make do with what's available. And as I mentioned, going into Havana with equipment is next to impossible. I mean, I had two camera bodies. Truthfully, I think really not the cameras that kind of flagged me at the airport, and it was coming in, not going out to land in there. It was, you go through X-ray in Havana. I didn't have a laptop with me or anything like that. But it was the plugs for the chargers, for all the cameras and stuff that I think that they didn't like. And that's what they were asking me questions about. They didn't really ask me about the cameras themselves. So I did travel very light. I did have a flash with me, but I don't think I took it out of the bag really more than once.
Tell me about what kind of equipment you're using. You're shooting all 35 medium format. What are you up to?
Well, basically, I'll choose a camera. Depending on the job, I'm kind of a camera junkie in that I love old cameras. I love cameras that don't even have batteries. Adapting them to modern use is always a fun challenge to me. And then all the way up to the high-end digital cameras that so many people are asking for these days. I'd say the go-to film cameras for me are primarily an RZ67 that's from Mamiya, and then as well a Ebony 4x5, which is a Japanese camera that a photographer I was friends with when I got started in the business recommended to me. And it's this beautiful titanium and mahogany wood camera that's special ordered through one place in America, in Wisconsin, and it comes from Japan, and they custom make them for you. They're really lightweight and beautiful field cameras with full functions. And I always love my old Rolly SL66E, which is kind of one of those little rare cameras that has a beautiful piece of glass on it that you just cannot mimic with anything. No digital is recreating that at all, so I've always gone to that as a fun camera to shoot with.
Let's talk about stock. What do you like to shoot on film-wise?
Well, black and white, which is always one of my favorites to shoot if I can, is the Fuji Acris, which is really just, to me, exactly what I like about black and white. It's got grain, but not too much grain. Nice amount of contrast, not too heavy, not too light. It's pretty versatile if you need to push it at all or anything like that. And then from there, I'd say primarily color-wise, I shoot on the 160S film from Fuji and occasionally the 400H if necessary. I actually also really like the NPZ, the 800Z they call it, I think now, film when I'm doing low light condition type stuff, especially with that Rolly because the Rolly has a 2.8 lens that really allows for handheld low light photography.
Yeah, it's beautiful stuff. People don't realize that it's very difficult to recreate this type of look with film in digital. And I know you have a story about some of your customers. I think a lot of people now are probably pushing you in with all the editorial and travel work you're doing, even with the portraiture stuff. They're probably saying, hey, man, I want digital now. I want the file tomorrow. And I think you have shown that you can supply the image in the same time frame as if you were shooting digital. But what kind of flack and feedback have you got from your clients and customers because you are a film shooter?
Well, like I said, primarily people do want digital these days. And I think it's a combination of things. It's a lack of understanding of the difference between the two. As well, that everybody's got a little digital camera. They know how instant it almost is. In a lot of ways, like how Polaroid used to be that instant gratification, be it 90 seconds later. However, there are a lot of purists that are still out there. I mentioned to you that I had recently had a conversation with a potential client that had shown me a photograph on his wall from a previous ad campaign that he had shot for his cigar company. He was really interested in having that kind of feeling recreated, and he kept asking me if you could do that digitally, and I told him, yes, you can, but you're going to need to rent the highest-end digital cameras in order to get that amount of sharpness and quality. I said the tonality and the amount of color could be recreated digitally, but the feeling that he's going for, which is really what he kept talking about, I said that only exists on film. And something I've always prided myself on is, in a sense, fooling my clients into not knowing whether it's film or digital. I actually waited quite a long time to move to digital because I wanted to wait till the technology was there in order for me to be able to do that kind of a thing. And something that I've developed since technology has moved further on is with my retouching, I actually have filters that mimic films so that, once again, I can make it look exactly like the film or as close to as possible that I was shooting. I think only a few people would really be able to look at it and not know. But if somebody said to me, hey, can you shoot this? And gave me the ability to choose, be it film or digital, of course I'd like to shoot it on film. I mean, I think there's something magical about it. It's what we all got interested in photography in the first place for. Yes, digital is magic, but it's different. It's a different kind of magic.
What is your workflow when you're shooting films? So you shoot it, you develop your own stuff, you work with a special lab. What are you using to scan the stuff in? I'm sure it's somewhat of a hybrid workflow. So tell me about your workflow once you've captured on film.
Sure. Basically, a little bit depending on what film, I do occasionally shoot Polaroid film on that 4x5, and if that's the case, then I process that in the field. But for all the Fuji Quick Load films that I shoot on the 4x5 and any roll film, I use a lab in the city called Color Edge, which is now Color Edge, Done Digital, CRC, all combined together. They're great. They do a nice turnaround for me, and one of the ways that I've tried to do that whole is it film or digital thing with my clients is that I have been supplying probably for about 6 years now the images to them digitally no matter what it is. So if it's film, I have it scanned right away. That also, just like when you shoot digital, allows me for the workflow to send them, be it either on a website or just low resolution images sent to them via FTP or a file sender like you send it. And it's kind of the same difference as if it's low res versions of digitally shot jobs. So in that sense, the workflow is the same. It's one of those things where I think it's my only path to allow there to be that seamless interchange between the two different formats. And then from there, I do everything as high-resolution scans, as drum scans when it's film. I retouch it and then send it to the client from there.
So do you typically have most things a drum scan, or let's say you're going to shoot a bunch of 35? You just have a low-res scan done until a client picks a final image, and then you go through and do a drum and retouch in Photoshop?
Well, I'd say, just to jump back for a second, it is very rare that I'd shoot film on 35. One, because I sold off the cameras when I actually moved up to the Mamiya RZ67, and fell in love with that size, 6x6 being the minimum, and then 6x7 the next step, and then 4x5 obviously for me. So very, very rare that I would shoot a job 35mm. It's not really fitting to the kind of stuff I do so much. But I'd probably, now that you ask me, I mean, if I did shoot a job on 35 film, I'd probably get a print made and then either scan the print and then go digital from there, or I would be hesitant to having it scanned, although I have done it. I think I did have some old stuff scanned on one of those Nikon scanners that had like the 4000 DPI or something like that. The quality was pretty good.
But pretty much your medium and large format, do you find that you shoot more 4x5 than 2.25? What do you really dig the best? Do you actually like the view camera the best, so we can actually just get into it?
I couldn't say best on anything. My assistants would laugh because I'll show up on set with 5 cameras if I could every time. I mean, now that airlines make it a lot more difficult to travel with multiple formats without having to put stuff onto the plane, which I never like doing, it's limited me a little bit. But even when I started shooting digital, I was on a job that was asking just for digital. That Rolly SL66E was always in my camera bag with a couple rolls just so I could shoot some on that as well. It is also the talking point. Everybody's seen digital cameras now, and nobody's surprised when you pull a digital camera out of the bag. But you pull an old camera from the 40s out, and everybody kind of goes wild and wants to know all about it and how does it work and I don't understand and all this kind of stuff. One of the last jobs I shot on 4x5 film was actually shot on a Super D 4x5 camera, which is the old camera with the hood where you're looking down like through these kind of like almost bellows in the top. It's a camera from the 40s. They're staring at the top of your head. You're looking into a big black hole and they don't kind of understand what's going on. And next thing you know, you catch these real natural feelings because people kind of let down their guard in a sense. Whereas today's digital cameras are so, especially the 35mm format ones, are everybody's used to seeing those. And so if you have a subject that's going to tighten up at all, they're going to tighten up when they get that camera out, as opposed to something old and interesting looking, which they may want to talk about.
I think that's definitely true, is people don't know about film, and even most shooters that are shooting today, at least the newer breed of photographers, probably haven't even shot film at all. So I think you're right. When you do break out an old piece of gear, people are like, wow, what's that? That is too cool.
Definitely. I mean, a lot of my assistants now never, ever even loaded film, and they don't know how. And that scares me a little bit. I mean, I actually didn't assist, you know, per se. I did a little bit of assisting in college, and it was actually through a college program. So it's like I got graded for it. I learned quite a bit quickly, but not a ton. And the bulk of the stuff I know is really self-taught. I'd have a friend of mine who's a photographer show me how to load a roll of film back. Then I would just practice. It bothers me a little bit that these new photographers, new assistants are not learning that stuff in school anymore. And even ones who've gone to some of the art schools, per se. It's got to be more scary for filmmakers and manufacturers of Polaroid and all that kind of stuff, because it's showing where the trend is kind of going, unfortunately.
Definitely true, but there has been an increase here in film sales over the past year or so, because I think people are figuring that, you know something, digital is all fun and cool and it's great, but guess what? It's sterile and it doesn't have that organic depth and richness that you get from a piece of film capture, as you well know, basically talking about that job with the 4x5.
Absolutely. I was recently pulling up some old files that I had digitally scanned and just retouching them versus retouching a digital file. Digital file is like so flat. There's no grain unless it's shot at a high speed, and then it's not really grain, it's digital noise. Digital noise is kind of ugly, and you wouldn't call it noise if it wasn't ugly. I mean, grain, I definitely shot on that 800 speed film and I pushed it up to 1600, and the grain is part of the photograph. It becomes part of the interesting process that you're getting at. Digital, you just don't really have that. And again, that's why when I have shot the digital stuff to make it look like film, I've used filters to mimic that film and repeat that grain so you get that grain feeling to it, because it really is what's missing.
Yeah, and it's a shame, really, when you said the schools don't teach it. I mean, I think Brooks anymore, I don't even know if they even teach any film at all. Before, when you went to Brooks and RIT and these other great schools that would teach photography, as you know, it was mandatory. You had to go down and buy your 4x5 camera. You had to show up with one. And I think anymore, yeah, they don't even deal with it. It's just like, okay, well, here, go to Photoshop. Thank you.
That's kind of it. I mean, I shoot on the West Coast pretty frequently, and the guys that I'm using there are students from that area. And it is very scary to me when they talk about not knowing this stuff. I mean, I'm definitely a victim of not learning enough in school, because my school just didn't. It was a liberal arts college. I was the only photography major in my class. Their version of lighting was a couple of lights from like Home Depot in the corner. and no strobe equipment, nothing like that. And they didn't even teach flash. It was something that I always felt was missing. And had I been able to do it over, I would have gone to an art school. But even knowing that, you know, places as prestigious as Brooks are moving away from that as part of the curriculum, it's kind of a shame. It's something that people are going to miss, I think.
Out of all the people that you've shot portrait-wise and editorial, who's been the coolest person that you got to work with that you sort of dug that was just fun?
That's a tough one. You tend to forget one to the next, but I'd say there's probably two guys that were the most interesting. One is this guy named Colt Wynn, who was, I think he was about 19 years old. He's the world champion in wheelchair bodybuilding. And when he was like 14, I think, he fell out of a tree stand and broke his back. And for all intents and purposes, this kid could have just hung it up and just given up on life. He just has this incredible drive to live and just such an amazing person for such a young guy as well. And he was really inspiring to be around. We basically spent like a day with him, myself and the writer, photographed him, and he was just totally just one of those people that you're always going to remember meeting. And I'd say the other person would be Chris Gardner, who is the author of the book, The Pursuit of Happiness, the Will Smith movie from a couple of years ago. He was basically a homeless guy who turned his life around and became a super successful stockbroker and trader and runs his own firm in Chicago now. And when I photographed him, it was interesting to meet him as a person, but then it was also one of those days where I just kind of got the magic thing happen where I was working without lighting and I'd gone and met with him. I'd shot him in his office with lighting and then wanted to shoot him outside underneath the L train. He said, yeah, that's fine. And I said, but I need to wait a little bit for the sun to kind of get in a better position. He said, yeah, sure, that's fine. So we met outside about an hour after the indoor shoot. The sun had gotten to a real nice level. Just so happened this building was recently moved or torn down. The sun was kind of beaming right through this little alleyway, and it hit this window opposite of him and made a perfect highlight on the back of his head, much like a lot of the lighting that I would do when I do studio stuff or on-location stuff with lights. So it was just one of those magic moments that just happened, and fortunately it was with somebody that was so interesting as well. So very memorable.
That's great. And what kind of projects do you look forward to here? What do you like to do, Ian, for your personal work? Is there something that you personally like to photograph? Is there a project that you're working on personally that's different from, of course, your regular portrait editorial travel work? What is Ian digging for yourself?
Well, the project I mentioned earlier about the portrait for the Cigar magazine, that was kind of an homage to Avedon's journeys through the West, which Avedon being one of my favorite photographers. What I decided with the publisher of the magazine, who is also the editor, was that in order to photograph all these people without lighting equipment in all these different countries, including shooting in New York, when they happened to be in New York on business or something and we had 10 minutes to get them, would be to photograph them in this style so that I could shoot them at any time of day, barring nighttime, and allow for a fairly consistent type of lighting and a neutral background, which allowed me to photograph them in a parking lot if necessary or in the middle of a field. As long as there was a wall, I could do it. So that has been kind of like a sense of a personal journey through a commercial assignment in a way, which has been fantastic. Right now, there's plans for a gallery show to be the issue launch party in the spring. So that will be really amazing if everything goes through on that. And then I'm also working on a book project, which I can't talk about. It's actually top secret right now for me. It will be coming out soon, and I will promote the hell out of it as that gets going.
That's great. Good stuff there. Any kind of big gigs coming up? You going anywhere cool? What's happening here in the future?
I just got an ad job for Bank of America, which marks the first ad job I'm getting with a new agent. And I'm really excited about that. And that's actually going to be next week in Charlotte. It's kind of a two-toned assignment where I'm going down to photograph the CEO next week and then back in 3 weeks to go photograph the kind of top-tier group. I'm having a group meeting. So it's going to be a nice challenge to light a conference room full of people and shoot that. I am on hold to go back to Cuba, but still kind of waiting to see if that's going to happen or not. Should be interesting. I'm sure the Homeland Security people will love to see two stamps in my passport.
And they gave you a bunch of hassle when you were coming back?
When I came back, I did get pulled into the Homeland Security office. What it basically came down to is because we went through Nassau, there's kind of three ways to do it. You go Canada, Nassau, or Mexico. And those are generally the way that people go. We went through Nassau, and in Nassau, they're stamping your passport twice in one day. And that's a red flag right there. So the Homeland Security folks saw that, and they pulled me into an office. The nice thing was that I had had that press pass from the Cuban government, and without it, I don't think I would have gotten through Homeland Security so easily, because when I explained that I was a journalist traveling on an assignment, and showed them the press pass. Of course, in that area, the Homeland Security person happened to speak Spanish. She looked at the press pass, read it, said, okay, get out of here. And that was it. So it was pretty good that I got the passport taken away and got the press pass, even if I had to pay under the table for it.
Well, that's what I hear. If you actually try to go through some channel or have some way, like you said, to take care of somebody for taking care of the press pass, it definitely makes things a lot easier.
Definitely.
So, Ian, tell us, how can people find out more information about your killer website, all your photography? I know you're doing a bunch of stuff with Fuji. You got some stuff you're doing with LowPro. Tell me what else is going on with Ian.
Yep, the website is ianspanier.com. Try to update as much as possible. I'm also a member of LinkedIn, which is kind of a network of business people. You can find updates there as well on occasion. But the best place is probably the website, because that's what's most updated as far as the work. New things in print, I try to get up there more than anything else, just because that's the most frequent stuff that's changing.
Yeah, this is great work and just beautiful photography, and it's so cool to see that you're continuing to use the analog process and you love film, and this is just beautiful work you're doing, Ian. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time.
Well, there you go, Ian Spanier. Great stuff with Ian. Beautiful. Can you imagine carrying around an RZ67 all the time? That's great. I just love that. Beautiful, beautiful photography from Ian. Check out his website. Beautiful stuff. And of course, we'd like to thank the sponsors of the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program, Fujifilm at FujifilmUSA.com/professional, our friends over at Richard Photo Lab at RichardPhotoLab.com, DR5 for black and white chrome over at DR5.com, our friends over at Upstrap at Upstrap-Pro.com, and of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group over at www.apug.org. So I've been your host, Scott Shepard. You can find out more information about the radio program and everything going on over at www.InsideAnalogPhoto.com. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.